Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. Can magical practice profoundly change your life? May it help to transcend trauma, abuse, neglect, and addiction, and open pathways to a new and powerful life. My guest this week on Vox Novus, Vincent Higginbotham, suffered multiple traumas as a child. After a decade of living on the streets, his path opened with a degree in industrial design and an understanding and practice of magic that changed his life forever. He joins me this week to share his story and his new book, How Witchcraft Saved My Life, Practical Advice for Transformative Magic. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Vincent Higginbotham. Good evening, Vinny.
Hi, how's it going?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Vinny, Nietzsche's aphorism, "What does not kill me makes me stronger," could be a description of your early life. Your sharing in How Witchcraft Saved My Life is raw and honest, but also offers readers confronting difficult situations valuable and perhaps prescient wisdom. Please tell us about those early years.
So as a child, I experienced a lot of different forms of abuse, from sexual to mental, emotional, physical, all of the above. When I came out of that as a 15-year-old, I became essentially homeless. I lived in youth shelters and treatment centers and boys' homes for the first year and a half of that, and then literally lived on the streets until about 25 when I got myself into college.
And in your sharing, you also talk about, in addition to the issues and the trauma caused by living, that there was also some spiritual trauma.
Yeah, I mean, so I came out of the closet. Well, before I ever came out of the closet, I was devoutly Catholic. I wanted to be a priest when I grew up. Like, I was into it. And then I had an issue where I decided I wanted to come on to a priest. And the next week there was a whole sermon at the church about how wrong it is to be gay. And I kind of had this fall from religion, this losing of my faith, which was followed by a sudden influx of witches in my life. Throughout every trauma that followed, there was always a witch kind of present. So I started learning from a lot of these witches during my traumas, which kind of informed my spiritual stance at this point.
When sharing many of your experiences in the book, you follow them with, "If I had known." What advice would you offer for listeners with young children who may be frightened by things that only they see and hear?
So when I was a child, I used to see things that other people didn't see. I used to see shadow people a lot. When I was 5, I lived in New Orleans, and I literally had this, for lack of a better word, it was a devil to me. So I say it was the devil that walked on my windowsill, and it literally pulled my blinds out of the walls. And I was blamed for doing it. And I'll tell you, to this day, I'm 40 years old now. Why would I have to keep that up, right? And don't discount it. I have a 9-year-old now who recently told me that he sees shadow people, and he and I, we've never had the conversation about shadow people. I don't discuss my magical life in front of him, for the sake of my husband, who doesn't want me to, just because, you know, keep him guarded and whatnot. But he, of his own accord, will tell us things, and that really shows that it's a real thing, because he's experiencing things that I did experience when I was his age. So if you have children who are seeing things, if I had a parent who could have said, well, tell me more about it. What are you seeing? How is this happening? How does that make you feel? You know, like, engage me in the conversation about it. I could have dealt with it much better than I did, because I thought I was crazy. I thought there was something wrong with me. And as I've grown up, I've learned that that's not the case. This is not as abnormal a phenomenon as it would seem.
So discuss it rather than dismiss it. And rather than say something that I heard when I was a kid, you have an overactive imagination.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because at the end of the day, it's very likely not their imagination, unless it's some kind of shared, like, imagination that happens worldwide with people who don't know each other. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, let's not discount everything as imagination all the time. Let's engage and really get to the bottom of it.
And for kids who are expressing fright, what would you suggest?
So I was terrified as a child, and it's not something that I ever want to interact with, that realm, right? And so in my book, I discuss about setting up boundaries. And what I did as a child was set up a boundary, not knowing what I was doing. So I obviously did something, I guess, innately, right? And what I would say is to any child who's experiencing that and fearful of it, you do have the power to set up that boundary, and it would be best to be guided into it. But if you don't have the guide for it, just say no. Like, just say, you're not allowed here. You can't be here. This is my definitive line in the sand. And if you cross it, there's hell to pay, you know?
Absolutely. We're talking about boundaries with spirits or some type of entity, but we'll also be talking later on about boundaries with adults, and we'll get into that later. But throughout the book, you use that expression, if I had known, as a way of sharing how you learned and for others to learn from that. Isn't that a wonderful exercise?
I really enjoyed that part. So originally I wanted the book to be called If I Had Known, and just kind of follow this format that the book follows, you know, where I'm like, this is an experience I had. If I had known how to deal with it, these are the ways that it could have been different for me. And here's all the lessons so that you know now in case you ever encounter this. You know what I mean? And I just thought that the formula made perfect sense, because I really wanted to write the book that I needed when I was going through it. Because if I had this book, it would have been like a survival guide, in my opinion.
You would have known.
Yeah, I would have known
what to do and how to do it. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Now, you offer a series of exercises in How Witchcraft Saved My Life, including journaling. We were just talking about boundaries, and one of your journals is about setting boundaries. We talked about setting boundaries with the hidden world, the unseen world. What about boundaries with people?
I think boundaries with people are absolutely necessary. I love my husband. He is, you know, the joy of my life, but I have boundaries with him, because if I don't have boundaries, then I'm not protected, right? And we should always be protected. And I'm not saying that my husband is somebody I need to be protected from, but to some extent, you have to know that you are protected. So my boundaries with my husband might not look like my boundaries with some stranger at work, right? But there are always going to be boundaries, and it's imperative for us to set those boundaries so that nothing else can, you know, get in and mess with us without our acknowledgement of it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And healthy boundaries are so essential when it comes to self-love, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Being able to say no to someone that is beyond what I want in my life, or thank you for giving me an opportunity, but that's not my choice, is a very powerful statement.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm a big proponent of the word no. I have no issues with it whatsoever. I fully enjoy to use the word no as a complete sentence. I don't need to give an explanation either, because that's my boundary.
Absolutely. And you just hit on it. No is a complete sentence. Absolutely. Yeah. What was the dark night that resulted in your path?
By dark night, you mean like that moment where it was the darkest moment and then I grew from it?
Exactly. That moment that you decided that you were going to change your life.
I don't think it was one particular moment. There were so many moments where I decided I was changing my life that if you look at the whole of it, that dark night would have lasted probably a decade, right? But if you look at the small moments, there were many dark nights. And each time it was brighter the next day. But there's new darknesses, you know, there's new tints that can happen. And so I would never say that there was like one horrible absolute moment where I was like, never, no more, I can't do this anymore. But I would have to say that I think my darkest nights were the times where I attempted suicide and came out of that with an understanding that I'm making a choice to live.
Absolutely. In fact, you mention in a couple of locations in your book resources for people who feel that they're pushed to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I believe that, you know, it's okay to feel that way. Right. Like, let's go ahead and change that conversation around this. Let's normalize the fact that people are depressed. Let's normalize the fact that people think about dying, because it's so stigmatic that I think people have a hard time going, yeah, I tried to kill myself, and saying that to maybe even a stranger or like a talk show host, you know, like you don't have these conversations regularly. And if we did, we would find that a lot more people feel the way that we do. And we would not be so isolated in those moments. And I think knowing those things, knowing that other people feel this way, helps you deal. I mean, it's okay, be in your feels, right? But at some point, you're going to remember that you're not alone, or hopefully, and move forward out of it in the power that other people have. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So you went through these series of dark nights, and then you made a decision that you were going to change your life, and you went to college. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I probably still had dark nights after college, but what I was living under a bridge at one point in a place called Somerville, South Carolina. And I mean, it was just the most desperate moment of my life. And I literally tried to kill myself. And then it had been raining for days, and that's why I was under the bridge. And when I caught myself as I was trying to strangle myself with a belt, I stopped and I was like, this isn't how it's going to be. I have more to do. And I got up and I walked away and I went to a store. It was a local witchcraft store. And I just kind of like started talking to the people there, and the rain had stopped pouring outside, and I was just talking to them. I really wanted to maybe find a job, but they didn't have one. But then they were talking to me about my life, and I'm an open book. I'm very transparent. And so I told them everything that I was going through, and they took me home with them. And at that moment, that's probably the first moment I was like, somebody cares without an agenda, because they didn't have a single agenda. They weren't trying to get me involved in their church, which happened several times in my life. They weren't trying to put rules on me. They were like, come sleep on our couch, it's fine. And we're cool. Like, try to get a job. You know what I mean? It was just, there was no stipulation to it. And it was very comfortable. And from there, I started moving myself forward. I was like, all right, I don't want to sleep on couches, but this is okay right now because it's better than outside. And I don't want to be homeless. How do I get to a place where I'm not doing any of this stuff? And well, I'm a high school dropout. So like, I didn't know how easy it was to get into college through a technical school, like a junior college with a GED, but I did it. And I was like, all right, cool. I got this step under my belt. And then, you know, the child in me needed to find stepping stones in people. And I started seeking that out. But at some point I was like, all right, I'm done doing this too. I don't want to deal with people that I don't want to deal with. So I nixed that out of my life and went back to kind of sleeping on a couch for a while, instead of having this human stepping stone that I could use and take advantage of, right? which were not the witches who took me in, just another random person that came in my path as I started school. And I slept back on a couch and I started looking for a school that had dorms and a way for me to take care of myself. And I found a school in Philadelphia where I was born. And I felt like, hey, I'm about to go to art school. Let's go create where I was created. And so I did that and I lived in dorms. And from that moment forward, I have never had to like couch surf or sleep outside or anything without it being my choice and knowing that I had a home to go to.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's a very inspiring story for so many people who may be in that position right now. So thank you so much for sharing that. So let's get to the magic. How did you discover magic, or when were you aware of magic in your life?
I wasn't aware of magic in my life as a child. So like the spiritual experiences that I had with the devil or the shadow people told me that there was something different, right? There's something else out there. But even when I went to church as a child, the bells at church were magic. The incense was magic. God was magic to me. It was all magic. It wasn't about religion. It was about this connection to the source, which as a child, I couldn't articulate that, obviously, right? But I always felt a connection spiritually to the vibration that is everything, which is what I call the source, right? And I guess as a child, it just made sense to tap in where everybody else around me was tapping in, which was through the Catholic Church. So that was magic to me. And then as I grew up, before I wasn't at home anymore, when I was probably, I don't know, 9 or 10, somewhere around there, I caught my sister performing magic. And I went through her room and I found the book that she was using. And I was, you know, super into what is this? But then it wasn't until I really fell from my religious faith in Catholicism that I first actually started following this path of witchcraft. And it was a long time before I actually dove in and I said, hey, I'm a witch, right? Like I explored several different things. Witchcraft was just one avenue that I looked down, right? But I mean, I have explored all of the religions to try and understand them better and find my right fit. And at the end of the day, it's always been witches who come back into my life. And so there's this clear message that I'm receiving that's like, hey, you're onto something here. You have a message to deliver. And this is probably that spectrum that's going to receive that. And when I stopped worrying about my science mind, and I started paying attention to my intuitive mind, the science started making sense.
And when did you self-identify as a witch?
It was like in my mid-30s. So I've been experiencing a witchy life since I was, you know, like 12 or 13. I've had a lot of witches in my life. I've known a lot about witchcraft. I've studied it. Paid attention and everything, but I didn't actually call myself a witch until I was probably mid-30s, and I'm 40 now, so it hasn't been that long, like maybe 5 or 6 years. But I've had this kind of practice that's always been there. And the more I looked at witchcraft, the more I can see that several things that I was already doing, like giving gratitude every day or touching the earth or talking to trees or loving an animal, you know, this is all part of witchcraft. And so much of what my daily practice was before calling myself a witch is still part of my daily practice as a witch.
You share that magic is our birthright. Is this a gift that everyone who chooses may access and develop?
Absolutely. I think that it's a gift that everybody does access and develop, whether they choose to or not. I think this is a very natural part of the human condition. And whether you are agnostic, atheist, Christian, Hindu, whatever, right? We're all tapping into the source, whether we know it or not. When you have those moments where you're like, man, I'm not going to take that turn. I'm going to go straight this time, because you can get to work that way also. And then you find out there was an accident or some kind of hold up, right? That's you tapping into the source. You are literally using your birthright of magic at that moment. Or when you are really wanting something, like maybe you're down to your last dollar and you're like, man, I just really need $20. And then it finds its way to you. Now, this doesn't happen every day. Right? This isn't something that you can go out and go, I really want $20. Last time I wanted $20, I got $20. And then like make that happen right away without a lot of practice. You really like to manifest things into your life on a regular basis or with accuracy, you really need a lot of practice. But what we're doing without knowing it is literally manifesting all the time.
So it's a connection with the energy that emanates from everything and everywhere.
Yes. I think that there is a vibration to everything physical, whether it's my dog, my table, or my air conditioner, or me, that it's got the same vibration. That is what makes it physical. And that it's like in between the atoms and molecules and stuff, right? And that is where the source is.
And then recognizing that energy and then literally commanding it.
Yeah, well, no, not commanding it, working with it.
Working with it.
Yeah, like I don't have any more power than it does. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But if I find the right flow, if I get in the right space, right, then I can work with it and I can help use it to manipulate the world to my desires. Absolutely. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. My guest is Vincent Higginbotham. His book, How Witchcraft Saved My Life, Practical Advice for Transformative Magic. Vinny, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
You can literally buy my book anywhere that books are sold. If they don't have it, ask them to order it. They'll be happy to do it. I suggest small bookstores because they need money, but you can also get it on Amazon or from Llewellyn Worldwide directly.
And social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Vincent_Higginbotham. That's HIGGINBOTHAM. And I have link trees to everything, including an Etsy store where I will send you a book that is signed by me.
Wonderful. We'll be back with more of Vinny after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
What is dedication?
People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Vincent Higginbotham. He's the author of How Witchcraft Saved My Life, Practical Advice for Transformative Magic. Vinny, how may someone determine their strongest energy sense and develop it?
By energy sense, are you referring to the clairsenses?
Yes, the clairsenses, correct.
Yeah, so I think that the best way to develop your clair senses is to pay attention to what your real senses tell you first. So for instance, I'm a thinker. I think a lot. I want to learn. I like to read and write and listen to people talk and pay attention to things. And so what I know is that knowing is a really important thing to me. And I'm naturally prone to knowing things. So when something pops in my head and I just randomly know it, like, oh, this person's lying, or don't turn down that road, or, you know, this person is sick, let me call them. I just do it. I just listen to the intuition and I do it. And the more I do it, the more I can tap into it and choose to do it. Like, I really need to know this right now. Give me an idea. And then the first thing that comes in without doubt or anything, I pay attention to it. And so for me, claircognizance is my strongest kind of energetic sense, if you will. And I think that if somebody is incredibly olfactory, they just smell everything and sense, bring back memories and things like that, well, develop that. Because when you smell something that's not in the room, that could mean something. And what does your intuition say to you? And then also, I think it's important to pay attention to how those senses commingle. So when I just randomly know something and it's as if it's a message from the source, I get tingles on my neck. And this is a feeling sense, right? They're not the same. Knowing and feeling are not the same. So when I feel it physically and I know something, I instantly tap in and I'm like, all right, this is a thing right now. This is happening. Pay attention to this intuition. And I think that doing that over time, you develop it to a point where you can tap into it more readily.
And one of the things that I used to teach a class in sensing energy, and one of the things that I would teach is, if you're the kind of person who will say, I see what you mean, you're probably clairvoyant. If you're the kind of person who says, I hear you, you're probably clairaudient. And as you said, feeling, you're probably clairsentient. Someone who says, I feel you, that's they're probably clairsentient. And that's one of the ways of identifying which of the senses you work with, or like you say, more than one sense. And then how do they develop that once they've identified it?
I think that once you identify it, it's really about just paying attention to it then, right? And not second guessing it. If you are, oh, I feel this right now, then feel it completely and go with that feeling. Don't second guess it. Don't do something opposite, right? And see what comes of it. Because once you see the evidence, that's when you start developing it. When you see the evidence that it is really happening, you believe it better. And when you believe it better, you pay attention to it better. And when you pay attention to it better, you get it more often.
What are the four pillars of witchcraft? And please share how each of these manifested in your life.
So the four pillars of witchcraft are to know, to dare, to will, and to keep silent. And these are often called the witch's pyramid as well. But I like the idea of a pillar better because I feel that they hold up the structure of witchcraft. You have all this foundation work, and then you have the pillars, and then you have the whole canopy. And so the pillars are super important because each one feeds your magic. To keep silence keeps people out of your magic, right? But it also informs you to stop talking and listen to what's going on. Stop doing whatever you're doing and pay attention. So it's not really just about not speaking about what you're doing, but it's also about not speaking so that you are paying attention. And to will is very much about having the willpower to move forward or like go with it, even though you're tired, even though you're ready to be done, you want to give up. Going forward, persisting is all about that kind of to will. Because once you persist, once you show the universe that you really want this thing, it smiles upon you and it gives it to you. But it's not going to just hand it over. You've got to put in the effort. So you got to work on it, right? And that's all will. To dare is all about taking the chance. Do I want to take the leap of faith and sign up for this job that I might not get at work? Or do I want to dare myself to actually try and work out 3 days a week, things like this, right? In the mundane world, when you dare, you get results. So in the magical world, when you dare to believe, when you dare to think, I do have the power to silence this person, or I do have the power to open these roads for myself, or I do have the power to do whatever it is that I want to manifest, then I'm daring to believe in myself, and I'm daring to say, this is what I want, and I'm going to receive it, right? And then finally, I think to know is one of the most important. They're all important. It's hard to say this is the most important, right? Because they're all pillars. They're holding the structure up. But to know is imperative, because you have to have knowledge in order to make informed decisions. Or in magic, if you don't know how a rule works, how can you break it? How can you adapt around the rule? Things like that. So knowing is imperative in witchcraft for that. And you really should have an understanding of what you're doing. Because if you're just winging it or just jumping into it, and you don't know how you're affecting yourself and you're not wording things correctly, you could harm yourself or others or make your situation worse. For me, I think that basically when it comes down to it, from the very beginning, keeping silence has always been a thing that I find difficult, because I don't know how to shut up. I'm a talker, if you couldn't tell. And so having the ability to keep silence and, you know, find a place in myself to not say my truth was very difficult. And in my personal life, what I relate that to in the book is, while I was homeless, Christians tried to take me in, but it was all this kind of conversion therapy thing where they tried to make me not gay also. Well, for the sake of my own survival, I lied. I kept quiet. I was silent about how I really do love men, and their praying over me isn't changing anything, right? And then once I broke that silence, it all came tumbling down. So in essence, I learned that you have to choose your battles in keeping silence. But then also I learned that keeping silence sometimes is not okay, because now I've basically taken advantage of these people, but it all goes down the toilet the minute I'm truthful and honest. And was it even worth it? You know what I mean? Was it really stable? So in using silence in that way in my mundane world, I really learned, kind of, it's a double-edged sword. But in the magical world, I learned that not discussing my magic with people in great detail helps to solidify my belief system in it. Because at the end of the day, to make magic work, you really have to have faith in it. To work witchcraft, you have to believe in what you're doing. And so if I have a conversation with my sister who's like, well, that's not going to work, or she just disagrees with my process, then I'm going to second guess myself. So keeping that to myself is helpful. But also, I love to make reels on Instagram of the magic that I'm doing. So I don't want to give the whole like horse and cart away. I don't want to give away the farm on what I'm doing, but I want to share. So I can take in energy from people who view it. This is called techno witchcraft, or like techno magic, right? You're using technology to inform your magic or empower it. So when I put a spell on a reel, I don't tell people what the spell is or what it's for, but I'm showing it to people. And then when they see it, I'm obtaining that energy also. They're putting energy into my spell. So it's not all me. And so being able to be silent about what I'm actually doing helps to build up my magic still. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I understand completely. And by the same token, this whole concept is, it's like an energy collective.
What do you mean?
What you're describing is people are engaged in your videos, engaged in your process. Mm-hmm. And even though you're not saying it out loud, what they're doing is they're sharing their energy, and it becomes an energy collective, which makes the thing more powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, like even down to the Bible, it says we're two or more gathered, right? Absolutely. And so this is how magic works. When you have a coven of people working on the same thing, you're more likely to get your results much faster. You know, you just have more energy built up. So why not share it, right? And get that energy built up and then use it, like empower it, because that's what it's for. And if they're interested in watching it, then they're interested in sharing it. And it's not like I'm taking energy without asking. I'm like, here's this thing I put up. So I'm giving my sacrifice of you seeing this personal and intricate part of myself, let's say intimate even, right? Because my magic is intimate. And so I'm exposing myself and being vulnerable. And that's my gift. That's my sacrifice in the magic. That's how I'm affected by it. So now you're giving me your attention and I'm getting just little pieces, minute specks of energy that then builds up into the whole thing. So yeah, absolutely. Energy collective.
In How Witchcraft Saved My Life, you say there is no wrong way to witch. Please explain.
So I don't like rules. Based off of the life I've lived, probably, or being in the system, or dealing with people who put rules on me that made no sense, like Christians who wanted to pray me straight, or, you know, boys' homes that were like, this is your curfew, this is how much you get to eat, things like that, right? I don't like rules. I'm not a big rule person. So I don't think that witchcraft should ever have rules. I think that there are things that make sense, but once you understand why those things make sense, breaking that rule is the best thing, because now you understand, you have that knowledge, right? To know you have that. And then you can look at this witchcraft and you can be like, all right, well, I have this spell that I want to do, but it's a waning moon and I need a waxing moon. Well, how can you develop your spell so that it adapts to that waning moon instead? Right? Like, so waxing moons, in case you don't know, or in case listeners don't know, waxing moons are really good for calling things in, bringing things into your life. Waning moons are good for sending them away. Well, like, what if what I'm wanting to call into my life has an antithesis that I can send away? How can I break the rule, right? What's the best way to do it? And if I'm informed, then I'm not doing it wrong. There's not a wrong way to do it, as long as it resonates with me and it makes sense to me. And I can sit here and give you good factual, empirical sometimes evidence on why this is going to work in my case, then it's right for me. And also, I am not the magic police, and nobody else is. There's no such thing as the magic police, right? And so anybody who's going to tell you you can't do this magic is not informed enough to be making that statement. There's a lot of things where people are like, this is a closed practice and blah, blah, blah. And okay, cool. I understand the closed practice aspect of things culturally and appropriatively and whatnot. But if you're taking the time to understand the magic and how it works and why it works and what it is that is happening there, then you by all means have a right to use it after you understand it. It's all about having that knowledge first.
It's funny when you say there's no witch police, because there's a series of books and a television series called The Discovery of Witches, and they actually have witch police in
there. Oh, wow. Well, there's so that. Funny.
Trying to control those who they don't necessarily agree with. So it's really interesting. Many listeners, when they hear the word witch or witchcraft, may think of Wicca. Are these the same?
I don't think that they're... So this is, you're throwing me a curveball because people can get really mad at me.
No, that's the reason I'm asking the question. Yeah. I want your take on this.
So witches can practice Wicca and Wiccans can be witches, but I believe that not all Wiccans are witches. Not all witches are Wiccan is what I mean to say.
Okay.
So I am not super informed in the whole Wiccan world. I don't practice Wicca. I know a lot of people who do. I understand several things about it, but I have not dived deep into it because I don't practice that form of magic. I don't practice that. It's a religion. Wicca is a religion. Okay. Whereas witchcraft isn't necessarily a religion as much as it is a practice, right? So like as a witch, I am not going to witch church, or I'm not following a wheel of the year, and I'm not like, oh, this is a Sabbath, it's a holy day. Things like that don't matter to me. For my practice, I don't care about the wheel of the year, and I'm probably going to get burnt at the stake for that. But at the end of the day, the wheel of the year isn't that imperative to me because I understand the energies of the environment I live in. Mm-hmm. And I live in the South. And so like, how can I say that this heat can't be used for my magic when it's snowing somewhere else in the Northern United States or Canada? You know what I mean? So I just feel that in Wicca, there's a lot of really informed and smart practices. But as a witch who's just practicing witchcraft, not in a religious way, it doesn't resonate for me.
So you talk about the source, but there are no deities in your practice. Is that correct?
No, that is not correct. I absolutely have a deity.
Oh, please, yeah. Sure.
I work with Hecate. primarily because she is incredibly dynamic. And her name came out of my mouth during my first ritual that I designed for calling in myself as a witch. And I didn't really know her name when it happened. So I knew that that was kind of meant to be. But then also since I was a child, I've been like, as an 8-year-old, I was into Hermes as a god. And that has persisted to this day.
My guest is Vincent Higginbotham. His book, How Witchcraft Saved My Life, Practical Advice for Transformative Magic. We'll be back with more Vinny after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
What is dedication?
My biggest fear in the middle of my addiction was that my kids wouldn't have a father. I overdosed on heroin, and I lived. And I started thinking, you know what? This isn't my story. My desire to change had finally outweighed my desire to stay the same. I felt powerless for so much of my life. It's important to me that my kids are empowered and truly believe that if they can think it, they can do it. I definitely had to become a better man to be a better father. For the first time, I finally feel like I'm exactly where I should be, where I want to be.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up, like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Vincent Higginbotham. He's the author of How Witchcraft Saved My Life, Practical Advice for Transformative Magic. So the million-dollar question, Vinny, are spells real?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think that there are some very real things in the world that people don't realize are spells.
Such as?
When you write in your journal and you're like, talking about things that you desire, you're writing a spell out. Your words are spells, even down to no being a sentence. No is a spell as well, because when I say no, I'm putting up my boundary, right? And putting up that boundary is like a shield. And when you have the conviction behind it, there is magic there. So everything, there's so many things that are spells and rituals too. Like every time you wake up and you make your coffee, you're performing a ritual. So then there's magic in that. And if you start thinking about, oh, well, I want positivity in my day and you're stirring your coffee, that's a spell.
May spells be used for protection?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I definitely use a lot of protection magic.
Can you give us a quick example of that?
Yeah, I like to keep certain things in my car that help to protect me when I'm driving, in terms of getting an accident, that help to protect me in terms of warding off the law so that they don't see me if I'm maybe speeding for a moment, things like that. I also think that there's plenty of protection magic that can protect you in ways that you wouldn't expect. For instance, in my book, I discuss a moment where I was in a really bad place as a kid right before I became 15-year-old homeless kid that I was, and actually a protection spell is what I believe really brought that about, because I was being abused at home, and then my friend did this protection spell on me, and within a week I was taken out of the home, and I was in treatment centers and boys homes and youth shelters, and that's the last time I was ever there, and it was the last time anyone ever hit me. So yeah, I do think that spells can be used for protection often, and it might not look the way that you expect it, but if you pay attention after the fact, especially, you can see it.
Is there a boundary between casting a spell and interfering with someone's free will?
I don't think that a spell can interfere with another person's free will. So I know that in a lot of different, you know, traditional paths, they talk about not doing spells on people. But I don't think that that's, I don't follow that rule either. I will just as quickly hex a person and put them in a mirror box as I will make them a candle to help them have some kind of good fortune, right? But I don't think that me making you a candle and being like, hey, burn this and you'll stop having car troubles, right? Well, that's not me affecting your free will. I'm affecting the universe around you. And if I'm putting you in a box and I'm like, you have no power over me, you cannot use any kind of cursing on me, you can't see me, you're blind to me, things like this, right? And I bury it, I'm not affecting your free will. I'm just guarding myself. I'm literally protecting myself from a person. So does that mean that if they sought me out, they wouldn't find me? I don't think so, but I don't think that, I think that it helps to keep you out of their mind, which isn't really about free will, right? It's just, you become this not important thought. So that's not affecting another person's free will. I don't think magic can affect anyone's free will. It could lead them to it, but there's a point where you have to want it too, if a spell is going to work on somebody else.
Tell us about your work with tarot.
So I pull my tarot cards every day, and I like to think about the tarot as a hero's journey, especially in the major arcana, because it really does tell a story of, I think, the fool, on through their entire life. And that's like a whole nother segment, but, when I'm working with tarot, I like to read it intuitively. So I don't really consider the meaning of the cards that much. I know what they mean. I understand them. But sometimes an Ace of Cups is about having overflowing abundance. And sometimes an Ace of Cups for me is about feeling drowned and suffocated or unable to breathe. So it really just pertains to my feelings on the card at that moment. And I just use my intuition to look into my cards.
We had touched upon this a little bit earlier in the Pillar of Dare. You have a chapter in there on Dare. And one of the topics is to trust your inner voice, which we talked about before. How may we differentiate between that voice and spurious noise or ego?
So I don't think it's the easiest thing to catch on to right away, right? I would definitely say that I still try to hear my inner voice, and I'm not sure if it's my ego or if it's my inner voice. And the thing is that if it's your ego, it's going to be self-sustaining more than anything else. And when it's really your inner voice, when it's really your higher self, it's going to be for the greater good of all. It is more likely that anything in the world, anything in the universe wants to commingle. It's all meant to be weaved together. So when you're going against that grain of the weaving, I think that you deep down know it. And when your ego is like, no, but I want this car, or I want the last cookie, but your child is also asking for the last cookie, and your ego, and this is a horrible example, but your ego is like, I'm eating that cookie, when really, like, your higher self probably wanted to give it to the kid, because did you really need the cookie? But that kid, you know, the kid probably did need the cookie. It's a different kind of emotional connection to a cookie for a kid than an adult. So I think that you would view it in that way, hearing your inner voice and saying, okay, but is this actually the greater good, or is this myself wanting what I want?
Absolutely. I've had a number of experiences with inner voice, and I found that every time I've listened to a voice that was clear, that was not shouting at me, but was clear and required mm-hmm. action, it had a great result every time.
Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree with that. I see that all the time. And when I listen to the shouting, when it's like, I can't stop thinking about it, or it just runs over my head and I'm obsessing over it, that oftentimes is not the right voice.
Absolutely.
And then I find out that I made a bad choice.
Absolutely. This is LGBT Pride Month, and being openly gay in our society was a hard fought and won right. How is it for those who come out as witches?
I think it can be similar. The world is changing so much. So, I mean, I am 40 years old. So Stonewall was only like 10 or 20 years before me. I don't remember the exact date of Stonewall, but, you know, that's the whole reason we had pride and parades and everything.
Right.
So I think it was in the 60s. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I'm not that much older than the whole movement. And what I've noticed in my life is how much more accepting everyone is of things like homosexuality or anything really in the LGBTQ plus list of divergencies, I guess. I would hate to use that word really, but I mean, you know, other. I think that the world is more and more accepting all the time. It's not where it needs to be by any means, and who knows when it'll get there. I think small changes take a long time in our society. But in terms of witchcraft, I feel like I've seen the same kind of thing happen. And it's for witchcraft, I think it's more like a roller coaster, because there were times where it was super popular and it was okay. And people were like, yeah, this is what I do. And then there was other times where it kind of went underground and you didn't see it in the media as much and different things like that. But I think that the two are traveling on this similar path. They're maybe on the same highway, but at different places, or in different lanes, let's say. And some lanes are a little bit more treacherous than others at different points. And so coming out as a witch currently in this day and age, I mean, I live in the South. I live around a lot of Christians, and they know I don't hide it. And I don't hide it any more than I hide being gay. And so I haven't experienced a whole lot of pushback from it. I've experienced more people being open to it than ever before. When I was younger and I'd say something like that, people would be like, that's the devil's work or whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I've seen a big change.
Yeah. Stonewall, by the way, was 1969, 52 years ago.
Thank you.
Month. Yeah.
Thank you. So it's only 13 years older than me. There you go.
You share there is magic in gratitude. How may those struggling in life see the positive side of those challenges and find gratitude on their path?
This is my favorite thing to talk about. So I love being thankful about everything. And I think that the best way to answer that question for you is to say, you have to be thankful for the things that you don't have. And you have to be thankful for the things even though. So if I wreck my car, I should be thankful that I wrecked my car. And I know that that sounds like this crazy idea, right? But what lesson did I learn out of wrecking my car? What safety did I receive out of wrecking my car? What came next out of wrecking my car? Or even more so, like, how did my life change years down the road from wrecking that car? Like, what ripple effect did it have to get me where I am now? And so when I look at my whole life, I'm like very thankful that I was homeless. I'm very thankful that I was abused. I'm very thankful that I had a horrible step parent and that I, you know, learned about drugs too early and learned about sex too early and all of these things. Because when I look at it and I can be thankful for it, it has no power over me anymore. I'm not a victim. I'm a student. And absolutely. So when you have gratitude in those moments, you take back that power and you're like, no, like this happened to me. That's fine. But I learned so much. And what a better person I am for it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I've experienced in my life over and over again in a series of synchronicities is that when one door closes, another door opens. And I'm grateful for that in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, and sometimes there's a third door.
That's true.
Like, there's a whole book called The Third Door, and it's amazing. And it informs a lot of my opinions of the world. But, like, yeah, there's always another option. And persistence always overcomes resistance.
Absolutely.
So, like, you just keep going for it.
Absolutely. His book is called How Witchcraft Saved My Life, Practical Advice for Transformative Magic. Vincent Higginbotham, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Yeah, so everything about me is on my Instagram at Vincent_Higginbotham. That's HIGGINBOTHAM. That's on Instagram. I have a link tree to everything that has ever happened that has anything to do with the book, and lots of really cool things on there. Also, I try to be present on there often. I am also part of the Witch With Books, the Witch With Books Club, which is part of the Witch With Me community on Instagram and Facebook, and they have their own website. So check them out, Witch With Me. We have a book club. I run it. I'm the director of the book club. It's a pretty big deal. It's pretty cool. We're in our first month, but even with Mercury retrograde, things are going great. So I highly suggest checking that out. And you can get my book anywhere that books are sold, literally anywhere.
Vinny, thank you so much for sharing your story, because it's heartfelt, sometimes raw, but always with a positive note to it. So thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk with you today.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.